Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool, looking at how we can address inequalities in dementia and aging. This season is all about how dementia is portrayed in the media. There are many forms of media which can help raise awareness and understanding of dementia. I hope everyone has come across some of those. There is the rise of documentaries in care homes and choirs, for example, which is really good to see. Today, I'm talking to the Alzheimer's Society about how they engage with the media and how they try and raise awareness of the needs of dementia. Keelan is a senior policy officer at the Alzheimer's Society, working in the national policy team. His predominant work focus is the dementia health pathway, but more recently, he's looking at the potential of service and clinical integration on the care and outcomes for people with dementia. Eleanor is a senior media manager at Alzheimer's Society, working in the national media scene, leading media campaigns around the society's calls to government on issues like social care, research funding, and most recently, diagnosis rates, as well as showcasing the research that the society funds. So, welcome both. Great to have you both on the show. So, to start us off, I know I've just rattled off a little bit of your introduction, but I'd love to hear from both of you what you actually do on a day-to-day in your role. Keelan, do you want to maybe start?
Yes, yeah, and thank you for having us, Clarissa. So, very briefly, I work in the policy team here at Alzheimer's Society, and the role of kind of policy is one of influencing. And we sit within a large directorate of teams who are also responsible for engaging with and lobbying stakeholders and decision makers. And generally, within that influencing system, our role is kind of firstly identifying an issue that's impacting people affected by dementia, consolidating any kind of research around that issue, and often conducting our own research, whether that's kind of looking at data sets or engaging with people to gather their experiences, and lastly, establishing a position or recommendation of what we think should happen, and identifying who holds that decision-making power to ensure that change actually happens.
Really important. So it's, I think it showcases as well how important charities are in our field. It's not just us researchers or just the charities or just the government. It's everyone having to work together, isn't it? What about you, Eleanor?
I work in the media team. And I think predominantly my work split between sort of responding to journalists. So anything that comes in, questions can range from does coffee stave off dementia? How many glasses of wine is enough to keep dementia at bay? It's always amusing. And juggling that with actually trying to get our agenda out there. With government, so working with Keelan's team to get the evidence that their team has gathered and package it up into a really kind of hard-hitting way to get those media headlines and make government sit up and listen. So that's sort of half my work, and then the other half is getting all the brilliant results from the research that we fund out there in the media. So that is to inspire people to donate to us and make sure we can carry on funding brilliant researchers across the country.
That's interesting that you said that about the wine. It's a typical Daily Mail story, isn't it? How much chocolate do we need to eat? How much wine do we need to drink? You get that
Exactly.
quite a bit, these kind of, I suppose, misinformed information.
I think the media is always looking for the next, front page, and it's something that people really care about. People are really scared of dementia. We know that, and they want to find ways to reduce their risk. And I think for us as a society, it's about being really clear about what is actually going to help people and what they can do, because we know there's like modifiable risks that can reduce people's chances. So it's just making sure that everyone gets the best information, that people with dementia aren't sold some nutrition drink that promises to cure everything. So a big part of our role is being that voice people can trust, and when they see that in an article, so even if maybe the article isn't about something that we would agree with, it's still important for our voice to be there to kind of add that measured tone, if you like.
Yeah. And again, I think it highlights the value of the society in bringing evidence across, not necessarily just evidence funded by your organization, but generally evidence in the field, because you seem to have that, what's the word? People trust you if they see it. So that's really important, isn't it?
Yeah, trust is a really big thing for us. So as Keelan said, everything we do is evidence-based and also based on the experiences of people with dementia. So that's the most important thing we can offer journalists and the media, is the opportunity to speak with people affected by dementia, and also data we've gathered from speaking to large numbers of people with dementia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in terms of, we're kind of touching upon it now, so you produce these regular reports for the society, and the most recent one, which was on post-diagnostic care and called Left to Cope Alone, which sadly is the case for most people, as our research has shown as well. And obviously you do larger media campaigns, but let's focus on those reports first. How do you come up with the topics for those reports, and how do you go about it? It's a question maybe for both of you. Maybe Keelan with the policy team might be better to answer first.
Yeah. So in a sense, when we're looking at what we want to kind of influence, we'll more or less start by looking at kind of the research and the data and the evidence to give us a kind of general understanding as to what's happening. But the trick is really to, as you may well know, you know, evidence and research papers can be quite tricky to read, and you have to kind of read into them to actually elaborate out on what they actually mean. So I guess the trick is to consolidate it and present often kind of complex research in a really digestible way that kind of lay people and stakeholders and people affected by dementia can understand easily. And I guess the role of policy, you all know very well, Clarissa, that the kind of recommendations for practice is a vital part of the research article. So really the role of kind of policy is transitioning that research into practice and working on the barriers that prevent it. But this, obviously, where we come in, that research kind of needs an understanding of what is kind of politically achievable and viable, and what the current kind of state of health and social care looks like. But above all, I think the voice of people affected should be at the heart of everything we do and all of our influencing work. But I guess it all kind of depends on what kind of issue we're focusing on and what the research says. So, say, for example, we looked at it in the most recent report that kind of research shows that people aren't accessing a particular type of intervention, then we'll know where to direct our attention. So that would be kind of locally towards services or commissioners. But if we find a kind of issue that people affected are experiencing right up and down across the country, then we'll kind of direct our attention and influencing efforts towards national stakeholders like NHS England or Department of Health and Social Care. But as you kind of mentioned, the Left to Cope Alone report is actually a really good example of that. So we actually began from the understanding that we know that not everyone with dementia receives timely or appropriate support right after diagnosis. And this kind of often translates into people feeling like they have got a bad deal from services. And we know this because we surveyed, I think it was over 2,000 people, to kind of understand their experiences and to drill down what they really wanted from support. And what we also wanted to do was kind of drill down into different communities as well, and whether some groups of people affected by dementia were kind of adversely affected by services and how they're set up and commissioned. So interestingly, what we actually did here was that we commissioned out some further research around the South Asian experiences of post-diagnostic support. And whilst, of course, we found that the general dementia community did not have great experience of care after diagnosis, there were some quite pertinent cultural barriers that impacted the South Asian community. So whilst kind of looking at inequality amongst different groups is always a theme in our policy and kind of research, it came at quite an apt time, obviously with the onset of kind of integrated care systems here in England, and their kind of predominant focus is a reduction in inequalities in health and care, and that's the kind of priority for that, for their new kind of commissioning and delivery models of care. I'll pass over to Eleanor to explain a little bit better about how we got our key messages out there from the report.
Yeah, so I think the first thing that we think about in the media team when we're looking at how we're going to get a report that Keelan's team has produced out there is thinking, you know, who needs to see this and what action do we want them to take when they've read it? So I think for this report, for us, there were kind of two main audiences that Keenan's already mentioned. So there's the decision makers, people sitting on integrated care boards, people working at NHS England, CCGs, the people who have the power to improve by post-diagnostic support. And also, as Keenan mentioned, they've got that vested interest in reducing inequalities. And what we need them to do is both understand the impact, but not do it in such a doom and gloom way that they don't feel inspired they can solve it. So it's a bit of a two-pronged approach that we took. So with the Left to Cope Alone report, we really wanted to get that sense of the impact of poor post-diagnostic support out there. So we picked some sort of headline stats, if you like, from all of the evidence that Keenan's team has gathered to get kind of cut through in the media. So we talked about how 3 in 5 people affected by dementia said they hadn't got enough support in the last year, showing the scale of the problem. And then also how 1 in 5 people with dementia ended up in A&E and half reached a crisis point because there wasn't enough support. And as well as the stats, it's really important for us to bring that to life. Journalists absolutely love hearing about real life stories. People who read the newspapers want to hear about stories of people like themselves. So we had some really strong case studies from this. So we had a woman who was diagnosed with dementia at just 54. And she said, all I was given was medication. I got no information, no leaflets, nothing. And then we had also the family of a man rushed to hospital over and over since he got his diagnosis of dementia because of falls that could have been avoided if he'd had proper support. So with that kind of package, we were able to get some really nice coverage in the Times and also in the Sun. And importantly, also got around 60 pieces of regional coverage because we want decision makers to see the kind of overall picture, but also get that pressure at a local level as well. But I guess coming back to that challenge that we have of showing the impact, but also making sure they feel inspired they can fix it, we took the tack of getting an op-ed from our chief exec, Kate Lee, in the Health Service Journal. So their audience, almost half their readers are commissioners or involved in commissioning. And that was more of a kind of argument of how better post-diagnostic support actually benefits both patients and the NHS. Like there is a cost-saving argument to it as well.
So how do you measure the success of your reports and the impacts of your reports? So you just mentioned it, you got into the Times and the Sun with that, but more broadly, how do you measure it?
That can be a real challenge, particularly with policy reports. I think there's other campaigns that we do where it's more general public focused and we can really see, you know, big spikes to our website to look at information. I think with decision makers, it is more of a kind of art and we won't always know, like Keenan's team won't always get feedback of, oh, I read the article in the Times and now I'm going to read your report and pay attention to it. So I think there is a bit of a sense of, we know by logic that this is going to be helpful and is probably going to be part of a behind the scenes approach and a media approach. So it's a bit more of a kind of art, if you like, than something more straightforward of an awareness campaign where we can really see people engaging on social media, people visiting websites, people engaging with media coverage, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. And I want to pick up on something that you mentioned, Keelan, before. You mentioned the ICS. So we've got international listeners, some of us, so we've got integrated care systems you refer to. So it's kind of trying to link up the health and social care system better across England. It's a new thing that just was put into place this summer. So you mentioned that in the reports that you put together within the policy team that you try and map them onto the current political situation as well and how the infrastructure is. So has there ever been a time where you revisited topics of reports or whole reports with, I don't know, a new government, a new health and social care infrastructure and adapted them?
I think our role is try to be as fluid as possible so we don't have to continually keep going back and revising something whenever, you know, there's a big change in government. You know, for those British listeners, there's been many successive kind of governments over the past 5 years. And I think it's obviously with this the kind of integrated care systems coming in, for any kind of international listeners, it's, as you said, Clarissa, it's bringing together kind of health and social care. And of course, I think out of any of the reports we've done on the kind of dementia pathway, whether that's kind of diagnosis, kind of post-diagnostic support, or any other part of the pathway, a key experience that we continually hear of people's care and their pathway is one of fragmentation. So a lot of what we try to do in the things that we look at in terms of the kind of research and evidence, but also what we kind of recommend as well is how do we bring that together, and into how do we produce kind of recommendations that would culminate in a more kind of integrated set of care. So in the Left to Cope Alone report, a lot of people, you know, the general pathway here in England is that people kind of refer to the memory service, they're diagnosed, they stay there for kind of a period of time, but then we'll get discharged. And there was a kind of big disparity between what people felt like they were going to get from the memory service against what they're actually kind of commissioned to do so. And that was a kind of a big disparity in people's experience. So I guess to kind of circle back, to your question, we always try to be really, really fluid, and we not revisit things again unless it's absolutely necessary. But we try to have our kind of work and the evidence that we try to build as kind of fluid as possible.
Yeah, makes sense. So moving on from your reports that you do, really good reports, and I like reading them, to more of your wider media campaigns, okay? And when I just have to think about, dementia in the media, obviously I think about the documentaries that are coming out more and more, not just in the UK, but from other countries. There's some from Japan, which are very interesting to look at as well. But one thing I always think about is this Share the Orange campaign that Alzheimer's Research UK did. Maybe just because they get lots of celebrities on it, I don't know. So I hope you're all right with me mentioning that as one of your, I hope not competitor charity, but everyone working together. But what would you say are your main campaigns, and how do you come up with them? Is it similar to how you come up with your report topics? How do you do it?
So I can take this one. I think Share the Orange is an absolutely brilliant campaign. It's got such a simple message, and it helps people understand that dementia is a disease that one day hopefully we'll have treatments for, just like cancer or heart disease or HIV. And I think people don't understand that, and it's a huge barrier to being able to make change. And our annual flagship campaign that we run every year is Dementia Action Week. So that happens in May. And this year, we were encouraging anyone worried about their memory to take a kind of important step and seek help. And actually, the messages we used had some similarities to Share the Orange. So our theme was, it's not called getting old, it's called getting ill. And we were trying to help people understand dementia symptoms. They're not a normal sign of aging. I don't know, you might have seen, we had a really kind of emotional TV advert out there with a kind of older couple. The woman keeps asking what time they should leave the next morning, and her partner's reaction kind of starts off a bit confused and then quite angry and frustrated. And then the last time you see them, when they're about to get to bed, he's like, realized something's wrong, and it's like really poignant moment. So when we're sort of talking about how we come up with our campaigns, we got to that stage because we did a big survey of people affected by dementia. Again, it's all about their experiences. So we had a big survey of people who both had a diagnosis of dementia and also people who were worried they might have dementia. And from that, we found a really positive finding that 9 in 10 people said they benefited from getting diagnosed. And that's such a powerful argument to try and help other people take that sort of scary step, if you like. And then in terms of how we came up with the campaign, we got some insights from that research, which really helped us. So we found out that confusion over symptoms was the number one reason people weren't coming forward. So that's why it was so important for us to bust that myth and say, this isn't just old age, this is actually an illness. And then the insight also showed us just how long people are waiting to get diagnosed. And from that, we could use stats to create a really hard-hitting news headline. So we had a headline saying 1 in 4 people battle symptoms for over 2 years to get a diagnosis. But I think as Keenan said, it's really about people with dementia at the heart of all of this. So much of what we did with Dementia Action Week was sharing kind of inspiring stories of how a diagnosis can completely change someone's life. So we had a woman who's she saw her husband's personality was changing over a year. He was becoming more forgetful. He kept thinking the family were moving things in the house. And he actually only got a diagnosis when he reached crisis point. He was stuck in Scotland on a work trip and completely unable to get on a train. And his wife had to drive 6 hours to pick him up. And it was only that moment where she took him to the GP the next day and they finally got the support they needed. And it was just such a huge relief. So a lot of that campaign was sharing stories like that. So people in the general public can think, oh, maybe that's me or my loved one. We knew denial was a really big thing. So we really needed to reach people, not just people that might have memory problems themselves, but their families, their friends, so that they can sort of start that tricky conversation about getting support. And I guess similarly with Share the Orange, we also used a lot of celebrities. So we had Jonathan Pryce, the actor, and David Baddiel, the comedian. We got them on kind of big breakfast slots, ITV's Good Morning Britain. And then we also, we've got quite a lot of partnerships. I think you mentioned at the beginning, you know, charities really have that role in bringing people together. So we managed to get like the FA, the Mayor of London, lots of big names to share our messaging on social media and get out to new people.
In terms of the delay in diagnosis, that's something I come across quite a bit with people living with dementia, but also the carers that are not participants in our research, but that are advising us and active team members in our research as well. And they share these stories a lot, particularly for those that have rarer dementia, so not Alzheimer's disease dementia, because they've been bouncing off between diagnoses, or the GP was saying, oh, you're too young, no, you don't have dementia, all of these things. And that can be so distressing for everyone, because you think, well, something's not right, but what is it? So as upsetting as receiving a diagnosis can be, it's also often a relief, isn't it? Oh, that's the reason why these things are happening. And in terms of your conference, yes, I try and engage every year with your Dementia Action Week. It's fantastic because it really raises awareness and brings everyone to do more things about dementia. And I was at the annual conference as well, and the video you were saying, the advert was shown, and I don't think there were any dry eyes in the audience. It was very emotional, but really reflecting how it is in real life. So really good advert. And also at the conference was Sajid Javid. And basically the society was trying to make him listen everything that's going on. And we've had, I think it was Joy Watson. She's a person, a very active person living with dementia from Manchester. She's fantastic and she speaks her mind. And she came up to him and she said, I'm sorry, but I just have to say this. What are you doing? Help us now, not just people in 10 years with your plan. And it's great to have her say this so bluntly because it needed to be said. But in a way, his responses were kind of political again. Well, we'll try and do this, kind of referring to things happening a bit later. So how do you see, going back to the success of campaigns and reports, how do you see an impact, especially, I mean, it's great to have politicians at the conference. It's great to make them listen. But do things actually change?
Yeah. Well, that was actually a great moment by Joy. accosting the then Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, which I don't think he planned for. But I guess it won't come as any surprise to your listeners that, you know, we and everyone else kind of see dementia as one of, if not the biggest, health and social care kind of challenge we face. So in terms of kind of having Sajid Javid there, we thought it was appropriate that we needed to hear from those decision makers who can really put in place systems needed to ensure that people can actually live well with dementia right across the country. So we're really, really pleased when kind of Sajid Javid agreed to be a keynote speaker at our conference. And there were some great anecdotes about how far we've come with dementia, particularly since around kind of 2010, since the past kind of decade or so. And I think he noted in his speech that when he was in kind of David Cameron's cabinet, who was really kind of the first prime minister to spearhead dementia with the kind of the Prime Minister's Challenge on Dementia, which was the then national strategy. There was an anecdote of him, David Cameron, kind of devoting a full cabinet session to to dementia, enrolling kind of this whole cabinet to become dementia friends. But in terms of kind of successful campaigns and kind of Sajid's speech and getting the right people to listen to our messages, what we really wanted to hear was some ambition around the next dementia strategy. We've all internally been waiting well over 3 years for this strategy to be published, but obviously COVID-19 and the pandemic, and there's been continual almost non-stop changes in government has meant that we're kind of waiting a lot longer than we all would have liked. But interestingly, kind of Sajid noted that he wants to concentrate on the four P's of that would underpin the new strategy. So it's a bit kind of soundbitey, but he talked about prevention, kind of personalization, performance and people. But what we kind of saw was quite a good impact of his speech was, I think, the most kind of surprising thing as well was we were kind of hoping for, well, expecting a five-year dementia strategy, but he transitioned it to a 10-year one. And I think this was finally the kind of a recognition that the challenges of dementia, not just dementia, but the broader kind of health and social care system, that were not going to be solved overnight and therefore kind of needed a long, ambitious strategy to tackle these challenges. But in terms of, you know, if there is kind of, we've had successful impact and a change has come about externally from our perspective, taking the kind of strategy as an example, when it is published, it will give us something to hold government to account on. You mentioned, Clarissa, about kind of charities being a part of the whole kind of health and social care system. And whilst we are kind of partners in what the government want to achieve around dementia, you know, we're all pulling in the same direction, wanting the best for people affected. But we also have to really remain a critical friend to ensure that people with dementia do get the care and support that they're entitled to. I don't know if Eleanor wanted to come in.
Just to pick up on that before, just to highlight that, I think that's really important that you say that in terms of the critical friend or partner. It's almost you're an activist to advocate for the rights of people with dementia and their carers, purely based on the evidence from research, but also from talking to people, and there's no filter to that. So that's really important as an activity. Eleanor?
Yeah, I think definitely agree with if what Keelan's talking about there in terms of that balancing act, that we need to be both critical but a friend. And I think from a media perspective, the way we kind of see successful kind of government campaigning, it is a long slog. And that for me, there's kind of three phases. There's getting the public to realise there's something a problem, and then getting the government to acknowledge the issue and promising to fix it, and then actually making sure they deliver on their promise. So I've worked at the Society for around 5 years, and social care is a good example to kind of follow that. So when I started, there was quite little public awareness of social care as an issue. It was something that it was only suddenly apparent what a nightmare it was when you had someone, a loved one with dementia, and realised that it wasn't just like the NHS. And it's something that we've worked really hard on to raise the profile of, to get celebrity voices involved. And I think we kind of saw that shift when we managed to convene this meeting between Barbara Windsor and Boris Johnson. And he then promises to fix social care, but that's sort of 3 years down the line of actually change happening. So you're sort of at every stage, you're having to keep the momentum up. You're having to keep finding new ways to say the same argument over and over again. But kind of knowing it's a long slog and knowing the changes will be incremental, but when they come, they're going to make a huge difference and you're not going to win overnight. So I think it is definitely a marathon.
Yeah. So do you think putting all of this together, the reports that you're doing, the media campaigns that you're doing, and obviously everything that other people and other organizations and politicians or celebrities are doing, do you feel enough is being done to educate about dementia as a broader concept, but also to educate about the outstanding needs and gaps that still need to be addressed, or does more need to be done?
I think, of course, more always kind of needs to be done. I think from an influencer perspective, we're working on kind of lots of different kind of campaigns, and our main kind of focus now is around diagnosis. And I think what we want to do here is kind of achieve parity of of dementia with that we've seen with other conditions. So a really good example is kind of elective recovery planning post-COVID. We've seen great work in terms of getting waiting lists down for things like kind of hip replacements or kind of cancer diagnosis times, but we've not kind of seen the same parity we have with dementia. So our kind of focus in diagnosis is that, like I said, we want to see parity with dementia around kind of diagnosis, and one of our kind of key influencing calls is that this is kind of an economic one. So we did some number crunching, and we found that we need an additional £70 million invested in the system now to kind of drive up diagnosis rates. I won't go in too much about how diagnosis rates are calculated because it gets a bit mathematical, but essentially not everyone with dementia has a diagnosis, and pre-pandemic there were about kind of two-thirds that had a diagnosis, which was kind of achieving the national target, and it dropped off by about 5%, which is about 30,000 people in England. But we want this injection of funding to kind of stamp out variation of diagnosis rates. So variation is actually a really, really key issue. So wherever you live in England determines whether you get a diagnosis or how soon you get a diagnosis. And particularly we've seen that with kind of memory services. Some services take 1 week to assess people when they're referred, and some take many, many months. And COVID-19 has obviously kind of exacerbated all these inequalities. So in terms of kind of what more needs to be done is that we kind of want to see a more ambitious diagnosis rate target. As I said, the target's currently two-thirds, but we think, you know, more kind of needs to be done, and we need systems in place to ensure that services can diagnose more people. But also, more needs to be done around diagnosis and how it's delivered and the kind of quality of diagnosis as well. We've done a lot of work around ethnic minorities and diagnosis. So in many communities, dementia is scarcely recognised as a medical condition. And the symptoms are often kind of entrenched in kind of stigma and taboo, which kind of prevents people from reaching out to healthcare professionals. And what this kind of inevitably ends up is that people are living too long with dementia without a diagnosis and the kind of care and support that it facilitates. And many services are actually telling us that they're only diagnosing people from ethnic minorities when they're actually in crisis and their family can no longer, sadly, kind of look after them appropriately at home. So we now need kind of more needs to be done, but we need kind of services to pivot and adapt appropriately, so they're kind of culturally appropriate and can talk about dementia in a sensitive and kind of understandable way.
And I think also not just for people from minority ethnic backgrounds, but I've heard some shocking stories, far too many, from people receiving a diagnosis and just being left with it. Right, here's your diagnosis, there you go. Not having a single point of contact afterwards, being completely lost, not having some people in our region, in Liverpool, in the Mercy Care region, they get post-diagnostic support groups from the memory clinic for 6 to 7 weeks. It's a little bit, it's not as much as they need probably, but it's a helpline for them. But then we've also spoken to people and we've done research showing that if you live in that postcode in the Northwest, you don't get that post-diagnostic support. But if you live in that street with another postcode, you do get that support. Yep. So even within a city, it varies so much. Really, yep. Should happen.
Yeah, and I think the variation points become really poignant when we talk to groups of people affected by dementia, particularly if they're kind of online kind of calls with people from different parts of the country, and one person says, well, I got this, and the other person says, what even is that? And we're saying, well, that's actually, and you know, that's an intervention which is in national guidance, which you should be given regardless. So I think that variation point really does, even as you said, even within cities, it's all dependent on, you know, the commissioners, and obviously different areas in England have different kind of commissioning priorities. They have different local populations, and they could have different kind of commissioning budgets as well. So that's the variation of what people receive actually is really, really stark.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely important. And again, focusing on so many different aspects of where media can help to focus on. Eleanor, what do you think? Is being enough done, or what else should people or we do?
I think just picking up on a couple of Keelan's points there, especially around sort of ethnic communities and reaching people that we haven't reached before. I think that's a big focus for us. It's something that we did during Dementia Action Week, and also with our Left to Cope Alone report, managed to get a really nice front page in The Guardian on the work we're doing specifically in South Asian communities. And it was actually really great to see media interest in that. And we want to push that more both nationally, but also with South Asian titles, so that we're reaching people who might not necessarily look to the national news for their media, and to be able to start those conversations that have more sort of culturally specific language around them. So we've got some storytellers that have said to us, you know, dementia isn't even a word in my culture. So it's just being really aware that we're not speaking to a homogenous group of people, and being able to adapt and work harder to do that. I think for us, from a media perspective, Dementia Action Week was really successful in helping people to see dementia diagnosis differently. So we know that 70% of people are now more confident seeking support from GPs, and that's up 10%. Public awareness around diagnosis benefits has increased by 12%, but there is a lot more to do, because there's kind of two sides of the coin. There's getting the system up to scratch for people to come and get diagnosed, but we do also need to make sure people are going and putting themselves forward to get diagnosed. So I think we definitely need to do more there. And then I think there's something more to be done in terms of kind of journalist engagement from our side. It's something we've been doing quite a lot, and there's a lot of appetite for it. So we sort of developed a dementia-friendly journalist guide to sort of really help journalists understand how to speak about dementia and, you know, the challenges that people might have when they're coming in for an interview, all the way to kind of advising on scripts for soaps and films. So we've worked with Emmerdale, we've worked with The Father. And I think that's the way of really helping dementia and all its complexities to be sort of shown in a really compelling emotional way. You almost need kind of long form to be able to get all of those different nuances across and people to really understand what life's like. So we want to do more and more of that. We've also got some dementia friendly kind of journalist awards to really help with a bit of a carrot for when journalists do a brilliant job in kind of portraying dementia in that kind of nuanced way for us.
So lots of different avenues you're pursuing there as well. That's fantastic. So thank you both. Thank you, Keelan. Thank you, Eleanor. For me, it's an insight as well in terms of how the society works in their different working groups. Fantastic. So I hope this episode made you as our listener think more about how we can all raise more awareness about what's happening in dementia and what still needs to change. So if you want to find out more about what the UK Alzheimer's Society does, take a look at the bio. But for now, goodbye, and thank you very much, both of you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.